Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
Hey, everyone. Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck and Jerry's here too, and this is Stuff You Should Know, the podcast. Although Jerry's not going to be around for long, everybody, so savor her, relish her, smell her hair.
Ew.
All the stuff that you like to do to people you like.
Awkward start for one on the booch.
I should probably explain. Jerry's not going to be here for this recording session. She's always going to be around.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure people weren't like, where's Jerry going? What did you guys do to Jerry?
Right.
I don't need email like that.
No, who does?
So, Chuck, you already let it slip what our topic is today, which I'm surprised.
That's right. The booch, a.k.a. kombucha, which is, some people call it kombucha tea, but everyone calls it kombucha, really, in practice. But, you know, we're talking about the beverage, the sort of odd-tasting, fizzy, sweet-teed probiotic drink that is very popular right now that I don't drink. Emily drinks it every day. Mm-hmm. No surprise there, although she's switching brands now. We'll get to that later.
Okay, can't wait to hear, because I drink it almost every day too.
Yeah, I don't like the flavor, so I just don't drink it. It's just a simple one for me.
Well, you don't like anything vinegary, so of course you don't like kombucha.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, you don't like mustard. You don't you don't like white vinegar?
I don't like pickles.
You don't like apple cider vinegar?
Mm-mm.
You don't like red wine vinegar?
I mean, I'll take a little bit of that or maybe some balsamic vinegar on a salad.
Ooh.
But other than that, vinegar is a tough sell for me.
Okay. But the reason we're talking about vinegar is because kombucha has a kind of a vinegary thing going on. It's very tart. It's very acidic. And you said something in there that I don't think I fully realized, although I kind of knew it was one of those things where I had all the information, I just never put it together into a cohesive whole.
Okay.
But kombucha is fermented sweet tea.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, there's other stuff in there. But to make kombucha and it just be raw, pure kombucha, all you need is sugar, tea, and then something called a SCOBY, which we'll talk about soon. And you put those things together. Let them sit in a glass jar with the lid off and a little bit of muslin over the top in a dark, warm, dry, very important place for, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, you're going to have kombucha.
Yeah, and it sort of belongs alongside other things like yogurt and sauerkraut, where the microbes are a big part of the appeal of these things that you can put in your body.
Yeah, can we? Can I just call out the sentence that Livia wrote because it's hilarious?
Sure.
She wrote that kombucha is a food in which microbes are a feature, not a bug. That was definitely worth a hat tip, at least.
Have you ever seen the Volkswagen Beetles with the license plate that says feature?
No.
It's always very cute.
I don't get out that much, though.
So you mentioned SCOBY. SCOBY stands for, it's an acronym, S-C-O-B-Y, stands for a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast.
Yep.
Because that's exactly what it is. If you look at a SCOBY, You might heard it called a mother or a mushroom, like the mother, like what's it called? Like a sourdough mother.
Yeah.
But if you look at a SCOBY, it looks disgusting. It looks like something out of a science lab, like out of a Petri dish. It's round and sort of pancakey and gelatinous.
Yes.
And it looks like brain matter or something. It looks gross.
It looks like the muffin top of a jellyfish, but just the muffin top part.
Sure, that's another good way to put it. It's kind of gross, too.
And that mother, that mushroom or that SCOBY is what I saw far and away, at least in America. It's most people who brew kombucha call it a SCOBY.
Yeah.
There's a specific term for it, a solid phase cellulosic pellicle.
Yeah.
And when you dig into it microbially, it's astounding what it actually is. It's like a really unique kind of thing that seems to only grow in kombucha from what I could find.
Yeah. And it's what it is actually, or how it functions, at least in kombucha. It's sort of the fuel that drives that fermentation process to take that sweet tea from just regular sweet tea to the fermented, bubbly, weird tasting thing that you enjoy.
Yeah. And it's really insolvable. Like, you can drop it in just about anything and it will hold its shape. It has a lot of tensile strength. Apparently it can hold, so it's cellulose made of little tiny fibrils. And they're, I think, 100 times thinner than the cellulose fibrils you get from a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Plants are lousy with cellulose. But this cellulose is extruded from bacteria. Little tiny, tiny little things of cellulose that end up getting woven together to create this large structure that can hold, I think, 100 times the amount of liquid or water that plant cellulose can. And it's 100 times thinner than plant cellulose. And it's being extruded, pooped out of these little bacteria that are building this thing over the course of weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like if you made one that was the size of a hammock, you could put a house on it.
Yeah, easy.
I'm just kidding. I haven't done the math on that.
No, no. It's in there somewhere, though. So, Chuck, I think we'll hold off on how to make a batch of kombucha, although it's not that hard. But it turns out that symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast, it's a pretty good descriptor because that's what is in that SCOBY. And there have been studies of what's in there. And what they found is that there's a ever-changing cast of characters.
Yeah.
But that there seem to be a couple that are really responsible for forming the SCOBY and then in turn creating kombucha. One is a bacterium called Chuck.
You want me to do this?
Sure.
Comagati bacter?
Yeah. I think that's okay. Right. Yep. And then that's the stuff that forms that cellulose that gives the SCOBY its structure. And then inside, there's some yeast, and specifically the yeast from the genus.
Brettanomyces.
Sure. And those are the ones that actually seem to do most of the fermenting.
Yeah. And we have, well, at least in this case, there were some Oregon State University researchers named Keisha Harrison and Chris Curtin, who a couple of years ago looked at 103 SCOBYs that are used by brewers here in North America.
Mm-hmm.
That yeast, they call it Brett, and it's sort of used to be used a lot for old ales in 19th century England, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Not used a whole lot for beer anymore because it tastes funny, except for like lambics, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And also used in barrel-aged red wines and I think in wine, you just don't want too much of it. And in beer nowadays, like I said, unless it's a lambic, they usually try to get rid of it. I think it's like a contaminant in beer these days even.
So it sounds old-timey, I guess, then, the Brett. And that actually kind of dovetails with kombucha's image. It has an image of being like an old-timey, super old-timey, ancient, I guess is a better word, brew, fermented brew that a lot of people say dates back to all the way back to 221 BCE. Which is when supposedly the emperor of the Qin dynasty started brewing it himself, and that it was considered an elixir of life, a tonic for immortality. the thing is like, if you talk to anybody in the kombucha community, they'll give you that story, but it's just a story. Like, it's really hazy when you start to try to trace the lineage of kombucha.
Yeah. Butchers.
That's right.
There was another tale about 600 years after that from the 5th century CE about a Korean doctor, and this is possibly a name origin, because this doctor was named Kombu, K-O-M-B-U, who brought a medicinal tea to Emperor, would that be Enkyo?
I think so, yeah.
All right, of Japan, and said, and some people say, well, that's clearly where the name came from. Other people say, well, I don't know about that, because there's also this Japanese fermented tea from back in the day that was derived from kelp that was called kombu, and then cha is tea, so kombucha, but there is no seaweed in kombucha as we know it now, so I don't think anyone really knows the exact origin of the word.
No, but it is possible that that kombucha, that seaweed, fermented seaweed tea, just got used for the wrong thing, and it's kind of went off on that lineage of history, and that's where it came from. Again, what we're talking about are stories. There are some ancient documents that I think mention that Korean doctor kombu.
Yeah.
But it's just not definitive. To get definitive, you actually have to go to Russia and Ukraine in the late 19th century.
Yeah,
that's
surprising.
That's finally where you can definitively start to trace the history of what we call kombucha.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to see it there too. But apparently after World War I, they were lousy with the stuff. It started to spread around Europe, apparently in the Westphalia region of Germany, became very popular for a little while. In Italy, in the middle of the 20th century, it became so popular that a couple of things happened. There were people mixing it with holy water to use as sort of like a tonic and a folk remedy, which priests there did not love. And there was a song that you can go listen to, you know, you can go to YouTube and listen to it from 1955 by a guy named Renato Carazone. And the song was called Stufungo Cinese, or the Chinese fungus. And it was a popular song that's, I listened to it and it's not very good.
No, it's got a lot of dee, 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 like mixed in with it, but it's also kind of like a mambo-y thing. It's a mess. So strangely enough, Stufungo Cinese did not kick off the kombucha craze in the United States or in the West. It really was kicked off by a Swiss study from the 60s. And I do mean Switzerland, not Sweden. I apparently swapped the two when I was talking about the oldest periodical in existence in the Farmer's Almanac episode. So sorry to everybody who wrote in.
Yeah, we know that those are two different places, and they're not even close together.
No.
So it was inadvertent.
No, exactly. Like, I mixed up the names. I'm not actually confusing Switzerland with Sweden.
Right.
Like, I know that much. So this was a Switzerland-Swiss study from the 60s that said, hey, this kombucha stuff that they're making over in Russia that's associated with Russian grandmothers, this stuff is it's like yogurt, man, but it you can drink it. It's like drinkable yogurt. And we don't mean kefir.
No, we don't. It's still popular, actually, in some parts of Russia. It remained popular throughout Soviet Russia. They were, you know, they didn't have like, you know, American soda and stuff like that. So this was a fizzy drink they could make, which sort of sub for that, it seems like. Prisoners would brew it there. There was even a case here in the United States in 2015 where arms dealer Victor Bout was brewing it in a prison in Illinois. And we'll get to the alcoholic content later, but the prison officials basically said, like, you're making booze, you can't do that. So they added some time. And apparently, like, kids in Russia these days, or not kids, but younger people, are kind of on kombucha that they rejected when they were younger because they were like, we want American-tasting sodas. And now there's a newer trend where they're like, oh, no, this is sort of like cool. This is the old Russian version, and they're back into brewing it again.
Yeah, so it got exported somehow to the U.S. It blew up in the U.S., and we exported it back to Russia, and now Russian hipsters are into kombucha, even though it was their grandparents' like homebrew. And I think it was also not just they wanted Coke and Pepsi, and probably mostly Coke, They associated it with their grandmother giving it to them as if it were almost like medicine or a health tonic. And nobody sits around and drinks a health tonic.
No.
You rarely do. And this kind of had that association with it, too. That got stripped of it. Even though it's considered a healthy drink, health tonic is really stretching how it's considered in the United States. So it got kind of repackaged and gussied up and turned into a really fun beverage that kids are really into and that will just make you immediately cooler if you're seen out in public drinking it.
Yeah, as far as the Chinese connection, it sort of depends on who you're asking. It sounds like it may have been regional because there was this writer, what was her first name? Zhang is her last name for Folklife magazine.
Her first name, Chuck, is precisely Laura.
Laura. Okay. Well, she wrote about this in Folklife magazine and asked her immigrant Chinese parents, and they were like, I don't know what you're talking about. She said, well, let me ask my friend who still has, you know, a bunch of contacts in China. And her friend got in touch with her people in China, and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. But then there was another Chinese American writer named Betty Liu, and her father, like, recalled, you know, fond things about kombucha from Shanghai and these big neighborhood batches. So I think theirs was green tea and honey, though, instead of black tea and sugar. So maybe it was a variation, a regional variation.
Yeah, they called it Hong Cha Jun.
Yeah.
Not kombucha, but it does sound similar. And if you stop and think about it, just how the simplicity of what kombucha actually is, fermented sweet tea, it's entirely possible that cultures that have tea and have had tea for hundreds and thousands of years stumbled onto this, you know, independently and just called it different things, made it with slightly different ingredients. But it seems very clear that the kombucha we drink today was exported from Russia and Ukraine in the 19th century.
Yeah. And before we break, I think we should cover this last little bit that's super interesting about how it regained popularity in the 80s here in the U.S. There was it was for AIDS patients. There was specifically one AIDS patient. He was a ACT UP New York member, an activist named Sander Katz, who had this kombucha, and it, and you know, those AIDS drugs early on, at least, were really rough on the stomach, and it helped him, and it helped him keep his food down, and it kind of settled the stomach, and then it got passed around the gay community, and I think he found out about it from a friend in like 1994 who was, you know, a home brewer and went on to write a book called Wild Fermentation in 2003. And so it was the AIDS community of the Northeast United States that really kind of got it going again here.
Pretty cool.
Very cool.
You want to take a break then?
Let's do it.
Okay. We're taking a break, everybody, starting now. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody, if you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva Presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva Presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva Presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva Presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
All right, so now we are back in the United States. Mm-hmm. Kombucha these days, well, for a while before sort of this modern time that we find ourselves in. Yeah. Ooh, a spaceship just flew by. Someone should ask Chris Christie about that.
Oh, man, that was crazy.
Did you see that?
What a terrible question.
Yeah, he was pretty funny about it, though.
Yeah, he's just so lovable.
He is a likable guy. So kombucha for a while was, and it's still sort of popular with hobbyists because brewing in general and home brewing is really regained in popularity with beer and meat and all kinds of crazy things.
And I think there's a suspicion too among people who make kombucha that the stuff that's mass produced just can't hold a candle to the stuff you would make on your own.
Probably. But that's how it was for many, many years, starting in the 80s until about the mid-ish 1990s, when a guy who we're going to talk about a little bit now that you may have heard of, named George Thomas Dave, or GT Dave, started brewing kombucha at home in his Bel Air house as a teenager. Mm-hmm. As legend has it, he got his SCOBY from a friend who got it from a trip to the Himalayas. And his mom was drinking this stuff Dave was making going through cancer and claimed that it helped her beat cancer, which was officially part of the company's lore until they were forced to remove it after a lawsuit in 2010. Mm-hmm. About deceptive health claims.
Yeah.
But he is the maker. If you've seen Synergy Kombucha in the store, it's the biggest player out there, and that's the one Emily drank until today. and that's GT Dave.
Yeah, if you've ever seen kombucha in the store, you've seen GT Synergy. I mean, it's just, there's so many different flavors of it. And like it's clearly been around longer. It's got its thing down pat. And like you said, this guy was brewing this when he was in high school. And he started in 95. In 2005, he took it national. And you can say that pretty much is when kombucha really started to make headway. It didn't take off like a rocket quite yet. If you go back and look at the dates on a lot of the research articles that you'll find in kombucha, on like CNBC or Forbes or whatever, mm-hmm. they're like 2017, 18, and they're all like, what is this stuff? So it took a while to gain some traction, but he took it out of the health food store and started to get it into grocery stores. And that was what really kind of laid the foundation for kombucha to be introduced to America as a whole.
That's right. And the sort of unfortunate part that has come out more recently is that Synergy is going through a few different lawsuits right now because allegedly it is, even though this is a drink that is touted as being made with love and good vibrations, mm-hmm. There are some lawsuits going on now because allegedly it is a terrible place to work. And GT Dave allegedly would purposefully hire undocumented workers so they could be taken advantage of with brutal work hours, no breaks to eat, no breaks for breaks, go to the bathroom super fast and get back to work. Mm-hmm. It's so hot in there that you're sweating into the beverage, and then you have to go to a freezing place and your clothes freeze up. And just sounds like some pretty bad stuff happening there, allegedly.
Well, you say allegedly, but you don't have to say that anymore because as of, I think, this month, a California judge said, nope, this is all true. I'm ruling against GT Dave.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was a lawsuit from that's longstanding, mm-hmm. but there are, I think, some new ones. Mm-hmm. And he's been denying this the whole time. Basically, I think his quote was something like, I don't want to paraphrase it. Well, I guess I have to paraphrase it because I don't have it in front of me.
Sure.
But basically, like, yeah, you know, lawsuits are just the cross I bear. You know, when you get popular like this, that's just how things go.
Right. He just dismissed them all as frivolous in that quote, like indirectly, basically. Although these have been brought by multiple people in multiple lawsuits over multiple years.
Yeah.
So, this judge apparently does not like him, and the judge is in charge of all the cases. And apparently has said before that Dave lies through his teeth and is totally not credible. And if you put him on the stand, I'm going to tell the jury not to believe him. Like this judge has said this like in court. So he's having a rough time of it for sure.
Yeah. And of course, I told Emily this. She was like, oh, well, I guess I'll find a new brand.
Well, there's so many great brands out there, too. Like, I mean, there's a lot of, like, if you are into kombucha or you're about to be into kombucha after listening to this, you are in a beautiful time to be into kombucha because there's a lot of really good brands that you could find in just about any grocery store. And yes, indeed, it is the golden age for kombucha right now.
We love our golden ages.
Sure.
There's another big player in Kevita, Kevita, because Pepsi bought that one in 2016. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anytime in the beverage industry, it's a tough racket anyway. So you're probably looking to cash out to a larger company is the exit strategy generally for beverages.
Sure.
I watch a lot of Shark Tank. That's what they say.
Okay.
Coca-Cola got into it a little bit because they own Honest Tea.
I got that name.
Oh, Honest Tea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't think they make that anymore, but they do have some sort of Australian kombucha Coca-Cola does called Organic and Raw Trading Company.
They don't like to talk about it, though.
Right. I don't think they do.
So it is a golden age, and that's kind of reflected in the market. It's like a $2.5 billion industry, which is...
Not bad.
No, it's not bad. It's expected to grow to $11.5 billion within the next 7 years. Because kombucha is so good and because we're living in that golden age, apparently you consider it a functional beverage with energy drinks and vitamin fortified waters.
And Yoo-hoo.
Yeah, because it gives you great strength.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's considered a non-alcoholic drink, but that was up in the air until fairly recently. Because there's a well-known story, at least in the kombucha community, mm-hmm. about a inspector for the Maine Department of Agriculture who was going through a Whole Foods and noticed that these bottles of kombucha, this was 2010, so he's still like, what is this stuff? That they were bubbling out from under their caps. And he's like...
Yeah, not a good sign.
No, he's like, that's fermentation. These things are fermenting before my eyes. That means that it's producing alcohol by definition. And he's like, I'm gonna test some of these. And what he found, exactly. He went on a 7-day bender,
right?
And when he came to, he said, "These things should not be sold as non-alcoholic." Believe me,
I went on a booch bender. Not good.
No.
Yeah, I think if you're home brewing it, and this is, you know, it's a variable product. Anytime you're making something where there, it's like alive for a little while, it's going to be different depending on the batch and the maker and all that stuff.
Right.
If you're home brewing it, you may get up to 3% ABV. There have been cases where I think the guy in Maine, some of those went up to 2.5, and that's when Whole Foods was like, we can't sell it. Like, it's over the 0.5% threshold. So Whole Foods had to pull it there.
And this was like, this industry was still in its cradle. Like, this is a really dangerous thing to have happen all of a sudden.
Yeah, totally. But that's why, kind of around that same time, the Kombucha Brewers International was formed, which is a trade organization that basically is like, hey, listen, we need to sort of standardize this. Here's an alcohol test that everyone should be using, and we should all be on the same page about the ABV.
Right. So they really kind of swooped in to standardize things and save the day. And there is hard kombucha, apparently.
Yeah.
They're crazy for it in California. It goes up to 11%, which, woo, man, that'll knock you on your duff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the people who make kombucha have figured out how to keep it from going beyond the 0.5%, 0.05% alcohol.
I think 0.5.
I don't know if I've ever told this story before. Have I? About how when I was a youngster, I really loved Nick at Night. And sometimes on Fridays and Saturdays, I would go to the Open Pantry, which was a convenience store across the railroad tracks from my house.
Yeah.
And I would buy some Slim Jims, get some Twix, maybe some Starburst, really load up. And then one of the things I would get every time was a six-pack of Kingsbury non-alcoholic beer. And every time, I'm like 10, 11, 12 maybe.
Oh, dude.
Every time I had to argue with the person checking me out at the register, I'm like, this is non-alcoholic. It has nothing to do with any age limit. I'm allowed to buy this. And every time I was successful, I think most of them were just like, okay, if this kid's going to say that to me, then fine. You can have this non-alcoholic beer. And I would go home and crack some Kingsbury and eat some Slim Jims and watch F Troop and stuff. It was
amazing.
Good Friday nights.
You know, I do have a new answer now. And when they say if you could go back in time, because it used to obviously be go back and kill Hitler and do some good for mankind.
Obviously.
But now it's go back and live next door to young Josh. So we could have been kid buddies.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
I would have been older. You would have been the one corrupting me, though, somehow.
Yeah, for sure.
That would have been pretty funny. You would have been, I would have been like, what are you, 6 years younger, seven?
No, I'm like five.
Five? You would have been the 10-year-old corrupting like the 15 or 16-year-old.
That's right.
But I would have had my license first. You'd be like, yeah, now you can drive us to all the bad places.
Yeah, let's go get some Kingsbury. Chuck, should we take a break and come back and tell everybody how to make kombucha? Because I'm ready to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work.
That's canva.com.
All right, everybody, as promised, we said that we are going to teach you how to make kombucha, and it is super duper easy.
Sort of.
It's really easy.
Yeah, but you should also, you know, really look if you're going to.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good point. The kombucha brewing community is really supportive and helpful and nice and not snipey or catty. They're just very, like, whatever information you need to brew your own kombucha, they'll give it to you. And you could probably also make friends with somebody who will send you your first SCOBY.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. You can't make kombucha without kombucha. You have to have kombucha, which I think, Chuck, and I couldn't find this, that would mean that all kombucha is related in some way, shape, or form. Because if you just took tea and sugar and water and left it out to be inoculated with whatever yeast and bacteria in the air, you're not necessarily going to attract the same yeast and bacteria, those Bretts and the other one, that are in kombucha. So you'll make something that isn't actually kombucha. So to make kombucha, you need kombucha, which means all kombucha is related. They have some sort of shared lineage over time.
Okay.
That's kind of
cool.
I like
that setup. Yeah, it is. And that kind of lends itself to the hippy-dippy community aspect.
For sure.
So, like you said, you need a SCOBY. And like you also said, you can probably find some hippie online that'll send you some.
You can buy it, too. There's everythingkombucha.com recommends Fermentaholics. They'll send you a SCOBY for $13.49 on Amazon.
All right. And you get that gross little membrane-looking thing. Maybe look up a recipe that you might want to use. There are lots of recipes online, of course. But like you said, you got to have that unpasteurized, unflavored kombucha at the root of it. And, like, you know, you kind of teased it earlier. You put that kombucha in a glass jar. Mm-hmm. Everything's got to be super, super clean, of course. You're going to want, for your tea, a few specific things. You want organic tea because if it's not organic, then that tea you get hasn't been washed yet, and it's got pesticides and stuff on it.
No good. Not just for you, but also for the SCOBY, because it's a living thing.
Yeah, SCOBY's going to eat that stuff. Mm-hmm. You want to use pure tea because it tastes better. It's the cleanest flavor. It's got the most nutrients. And you're also going to – it's going to be caffeinated. You can't make decaf kombucha as far as I know, right?
You literally cannot, because the caffeine is one of the most essential nutrients for the bacteria and or the yeast. They use it to – they convert it into nitrogen, which they use for all sorts of stuff during the fermentation process. So you cannot make kombucha without caffeine.
All right.
The thing
is –
you
got your tea, you got your caffeine, and what else? You need sugar?
Yep. You want to use cane sugar, I've seen. And all of this, like, you can get organic cane sugar for very little money, even compared to, like, just cheap white granulated sugar. Splurge for that. Splurge for good, loose organic tea. Use filtered water. Or you can just get, like, a gallon of distilled water while you're at the grocery store buying cane sugar.
Yeah.
It's that whole garbage in, garbage out kind of mentality. It also applies to kombucha, too.
All right, so you've got your ingredients. You've got your SCOBY from a guy named, you know,
SCOBY.
SCOBY Bro. SCOBY Bro 123. And you get your sweet tea made. You add your starter, kombucha. Mm-hmm. You put in your SCOBY, and then you put it in that jar, like you said, with the, what's it called? The
muslin?
Over the top. Yeah, the muslin over the top. Mm-hmm. And then you put it in that dark, dry place, like a cabinet or something, and let it do its thing for how long? Like a week or so?
Yes. If you're fermenting kombucha, it takes 7 to 14 days for the first ferment to finish.
All right.
Then after that, you bottle it, and that you leave it again for another, usually a few days, maybe 7 days, and it does its second ferment in the bottle. And that's where the alcohol and the bubbles really start to come about, because those are both byproducts of fermentation, CO2 and alcohol. Again, though, depending on, I'm not actually quite sure how you control the amount of alcohol that gets developed. I think it's maybe the amount of sugar you add initially, and then also how long you let it ferment too in that second mm-hmm. fermentation. And then to stop it from the second fermentation, you start refrigerating it, and that makes everything go dormant.
Yeah, and when you bottle it, that's when you're also going to, juice it up a little bit. If you want to put some ginger, mm-hmm. some herbs, some other kind of like fruity juices or something, that's where you can, experiment with your own taste and flavor profiles that you like.
Yeah, and you want to use glass for everything. The reason why is because it's so acidic, as we'll see, that it can leach metals right out of a metal container.
Yeah.
So, and you can also leach lead out of the glaze of a ceramic container. So you basically wow. just want to use sterilized glass, like really well-washed glass. And you also okay. want to keep yourself clean. And well, this, I'm yeah. sure, is very hard for a lot of the kombucha brewer community.
Sure.
But you definitely want to wash your hands thoroughly before you ever touch your SCOBY, because, again, it's a living thing. And if you accidentally get some bad bugs on it, it can grow mold, it can get weak, it can die. All sorts of stuff can happen. So you want to be very gentle and kind with your SCOBY and very clean, too. So you want to make sure you and your glass bottles are all super clean before you make kombucha.
Yeah, Scooby Bro 123 in his video. It's like, all right, this next part, man, is a real bummer, but you're going to have to take a shower.
Man, the hippies are not going to like this.
Oh, that's okay. They're surfing right now.
There's one other thing you can do, too, or one other thing you're going to have to do. You remove your SCOBY from the bottle or from the glass that you fermented in after the first ferment. It doesn't go into the bottles. But it's reusable. It actually will grow.
I wondered about that.
Yes. So it actually will grow as you're fermenting new kombucha each time, because it's sitting there eating, loving life. And after a while, it'll grow thick enough that you can just basically peel off, from what I understand, the bottom layer is the youngest layer.
Ah, okay.
And there's stuff you can do with the old SCOBY. It's cellulose. Some people cut it up and dry it out and give it to their dogs. Some people eat it directly because it's full of probiotics, as we'll see. But you can also just toss it out or compost it, I think, is another thing people do. And you take that younger part and just start over. It's the healthiest. It's the most vibrant. It's the youngest part of the SCOBY. Or you can also take that part and give it to a newbie as their first SCOBY, too, if you want to be super kind, as the hippies call it.
Yeah. Or you can rub it under your arms to prevent yeast growth there.
Gross.
In your armpit.
Yeah.
Well, we talked a little bit about health benefits. They have done not a lot of controlled human trials mm-hmm. in these published papers. There was a 2019 review at 253 papers. They call them the Booch papers, and there were
out my drink.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
But there were no controlled human trials, so it's like you can't really point to hard science. But it is, it is something that contains good stuff. Like there are probiotics, and we do know that probiotics are good for your gut. We've talked about them before. I take a probiotic every day now, and it's really helped my system out. Like in a hugely noticeable way.
Yeah.
But if you read the bottle of a Synergy or another brand, if you're making that switch, you're going to see stuff like you find on a pill bottle of other probiotics, like Bacillus coagulans or Lactobacillus, like these really common probiotic bacteriums. It's what's going on, basically.
Yes. We know probiotics are good for you, and kombucha is lousy with probiotics. That's the upshot of that. And there actually was one human trial very recently. It came out in the last week from Georgetown University that found that it actually lowers fasting blood glucose levels. So it could be useful for people with type 2 diabetes to drink kombucha while they're eating a meal, because it will keep your glucose from spiking, according to this newest trial. And it's one of the first human clinical trials ever done on kombucha.
I got two words for that. Go Hoyas.
There you go.
It's been a while.
Have you ever understood what the difference between a Hoya and a bulldog is? Because I've never heard anything called a Hoya except in the context of Georgetown.
I've never even thought about it now that I think about it.
But that's their mascot. It's a bulldog, but they call it a Hoya like they're out of their minds.
Is it the same? Like, is it supposed to be the name of the bulldog?
I don't.
Or not the name of, but like, does it mean bulldog?
I don't know. In Georgetown, it does.
Because I'm seeing that the Hoya is a plant.
Yeah, it is. It's called the Indian road plant now that you mention it. Or one of the Hoyas. I think it's a family of plants.
Well, somebody, because we're not going to stop to look this up, because I'm sure the answer's out there. I would love a Georgetown Hoya to write in and let us know.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on then, right?
Yeah. What about antioxidants?
Well, that tea that you make this out of is lousy with polyphenols. Depending on which kind of tea you use, apparently green and red have the highest amounts of polyphenols in the end result, kombucha. But you can't really sneeze at the polyphenols in black tea, too, which is traditionally the type of tea that's been used to brew kombucha. Those polyphenols do all sorts of things, like they neutralize free radicals in the body. And we did our episode on whether or not free radical health theory is legitimate or not. But considering that the jury's still out, if it is legit, then the antioxidants in kombucha are really super helpful.
I wonder if you could make a matcha kombucha.
I don't know. I don't know. I wondered that myself. From what I saw, you want loose leaf tea. But I don't know why you wouldn't be able to use matcha.
That might be interesting.
Sure.
Also vitamins. There's lots of B vitamins in kombucha. B vitamins are great for you. But again, because it's a variable product, it's not like you can say all kombuchas have this amount of this vitamin. Mm-hmm. I believe some of the leading brands tout as being like, you know, it's a great source of B12 or whatever, but it's not like listed out on the ingredients, like exactly how much.
No, and the reason why, it's like you said, it's variable because this stuff is grown. It's not manufactured. And B vitamins are a byproduct of fermentation. So unless, I guess, they test every single batch and create a new label every single time,
right,
they can't say accurately how much B vitamins is in there, but usually it's enough to knock your socks right off.
As will the acid, right?
Yes. So acids are antimicrobials, and they've been found to fight off stuff like E. coli, Shigella, Salmonella, cholera. Again, this is in vitro. This is like putting some of the acids from kombucha in a petri dish with Shigella and seeing what happens, and the acids kill the Shigella. So this is all just like assuming that the same stuff is going to happen in the human body. Because, again, there hasn't been a lot of human trials, but we know that the acids that are produced in kombucha as it ferments do have antimicrobial properties in a petri dish, at least.
Yeah, exactly. As far as if it could be bad for you, probably not. I mean, it might upset your tummy a little bit, as any probiotic could, initially at least, until your tums gets used to it. Anything unpasteurized, like if you're having... If you're trading like homemade kombuchas with friends and stuff like that, there could always be a chance that there are some bacteria in there that aren't great for you. I think you can get a pasteurized, like professionally pasteurized kombucha, but that would kill off the live culture. So it's kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, it still has the acids in it, so it's going to have some benefits. But yeah, the kombucha brewing community is like, what? You don't want to kill off all of this beneficial bacteria, you know?
It's very anti-booch.
It is super anti-booch. I say before we wrap, Chuck, we name check a few other brands because I love a few other ones. So Health Aid is really, really great. Their Pink Lady Apple, I would point people to.
All right.
221 BC, I think is made in Florida. They make a lavender one that's just amazing. And their kombucha is real mild. It's not nearly as tart and it's not nearly as fizzy as most other kombuchas. It's not quite as dense, so it'd be a good introduction to kombucha. Hum is another great one. And then Big Easy Bucha. All of those make really good kombucha, and you can usually find all of those brands in just about any grocery store.
That's great. I'm going to pass those along to Emily. Do you take a probiotic in a dish, or is this sort of covering your bases there?
I take mine intravenously.
Okay, just a slow drip. Yeah.
I don't actually take a probiotic. I'm really terrible at keeping up with supplements on a daily basis. I kind of take them when I think of it.
I hear you.
And probiotics definitely fall into that category for me.
Yeah, I've gotten good at it with my diverticulae problems. Mm-hmm. So I've a friend of mine's sister said, you should take this probiotic every day. And it really has changed my toilet routine.
Do you know the brand and or the what's in it?
Oh, I can picture it in my head. No, but I could always follow up if people are interested. It's sort of just a good all-around probiotic, and it is righted my tummy.
Nice. That's awesome,
in a good
man.
Way. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't take probiotics, but I eat so much fermented stuff every day that it's kind of tantamount to it.
Yeah, we should do one eventually on the other thing that I don't enjoy, which is kimchi.
Oh, man. I eat that almost every day, too.
I know. You love all that stuff.
I do love it. And if you're nowhere near an Asian market, there's something called Cleveland kimchi. And you can find that in, like, your produce section, along with, like, tofu and stuff like that. And it's really good for packaged kimchi.
You could make that, too, at home. Don't you like berry kimchi?
I think so. That sounds very familiar.
All right, we'll have to look into that. That'd be a good topic.
Okay, so while we go off and think about kimchi, let's all just wait a second and pause for listener mail.
Should I read one, or are we really pausing?
Go ahead and read one.
Okay, hey guys, recentish listener, discovered you during second year of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You've gotten me through a lot, including graduate school and the beginning of my most recent career transition, which brings me to the point of this email. At a really difficult time shifting my career trajectory from engineering to veterinary medicine, in the sense of making such a major time commitment to pursue more schooling after completing a master's degree. My desire to learn far outweighed my concerns, though, so I applied. Needless to say, I was extremely nervous going to vet school through the interview process. It was an absolutely wild coincidence that you released your podcast, The Large Equine History of Veterinary Medicine, the day before I had my two interviews.
Awesome.
That episode reminded me of how much I love this field and how fascinating it is, and I accepted this as a happy coincidence. It calmed my nerves a bit, allowed me to go into my interviews the next day with a level head and renewed faith in my decision. I was accepted to both programs I interviewed for that day, as well as a few others.
Awesome.
Fast forward to today, my second day of veterinary school, and you released How We're Learning to Talk to Animals. I have now accepted that you're somewhat my guardian angels as you're shepherding me through this very exciting and very scary transition. Mm-hmm. Aside from those specific times, the podcast has given me so many laughs, fun facts, and overall sense of calm in what can be an overwhelming world. And I know you hear it a lot, but I'm officially joining the ranks. You have made such a positive impact on my life. Please keep doing it. Can't wait to see what the future scenarios that you hold my hand through. Sending love. These sign-offs are getting so good. Mm-hmm. That is from Gabby.
Thanks, Gabby. I remember that email. I responded to her to say congrats.
It was great. Love it.
Great email, Gabby. Thanks. If you want us to sing your praises about what a great email you wrote, take your shot. You only miss the shots you don't take. You can send that shot off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.